Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, Fastamai, good evening. Welcome to Update here on Manx Radio, where we'll take you through the main news of the day in under half an hour. So coming up, concerns from the farming community as Milan Vets prepare to end their farm services at the end of the month. Also, specialist lawyers have now been called in to examine the Liverpool ferry terminal troubles. We'll have the latest on what they're looking into. A former health minister says the problems raised in the new Manx Care report are nothing new and have been talked about for years. And keep your eyes on the sky tonight, because we could be treated to a glimpse of the aurora again. There were some great photographs from last night. You can find those on our Facebook page. All that, the weather, the traffic and the travel. And as ever, if you'd like to get in touch, you can email studio@manxradio.com. We'll start with a roundup of main news headlines with Chanel Fastamai.
Fastamai. Milan Vets is to stop its farm veterinary services at the end of this month, citing a long-term decline in pastoral farming on the island. The company says continuing the service is no longer sustainable, but will help farmers transfer to other providers.
Say it's a cesarean, we can't get the calf out. Farmers aren't, by law, allowed to carry out that procedure. It'd have to be euthanized.
The infrastructure minister says specialist lawyers are currently trying to establish how a problem with the new Liverpool ferry terminal was able to happen.
The important thing from my perspective is to get that berth working as soon as we can.
And after a dazzling display last night, the Isle of Man residents will have another chance to spot the aurora tonight.
If it is clear, then wrap up warm and go somewhere where you've got an uninterrupted northern horizon view.
In international news, the Democrats has released private emails sent by Jeffrey Epstein claiming they link Donald Trump to the paedophile. The White House says the emails have been selectively leaked to create a fake narrative. The health secretary has denied he's involved in a coup against Keir Starmer. West Streeting's criticised the culture at number 10. And Strictly Come Dancing host Tess Daly says being made an MBE is the greatest honour of her career. She received the honour from the King at Windsor Castle. Those are your headlines. News at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Chanel. Now, the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. And Deep Joy, first of all, there is heavy rain expected, so there's a yellow weather warning. It's in force from 6pm until 6 tomorrow morning, affecting all the island overnight, leading to accumulations of around 10 to 20 millimetres. So there is a risk of 30 in some places. Likely again to be some further surface water flooding in pro locations, especially because there's loads of blocked drains still. And there's been a lot of rainfall recently, so the ground's really saturated. So there is a small risk of localised river flooding. If you've got any concerns about that, Civil Defence will be your port of call. So generally the forecast then, cloudy, outbreaks of rain this evening and overnight, and that will turn light and patchy towards the end of the night. Light northeasterly winds, they'll increase moderate to fresh for a time overnight. Maximum temperatures will be around 8 Celsius. Then tomorrow, cloudy, the small chance of some patchy light rain at times throughout the day. Certainly plenty of dry periods though as well. Moderate or fresh southwest winds, they'll become fresh to strong east or northeasterly tomorrow evening, and top temperatures tomorrow around 11.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674573 or visit the showroom on the Snugborough Trading Estate.
Simply Income Protection from Kestrel Insurance, a choice of benefits. Simple underwriting and peace of mind with a regular income for up to 2 years if you're unable to work due to illness or injury. Kestrel Insurance is registered with the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority.
Carpet Land, the carpet specialist with the island's best value carpets in stock, often fitted within a week. Furniture Land, for three-piece suites, dining and living room furniture, and a selection of amazing beds. Carpet Land and Furniture Land, West Street, Ramsey.
Manx Mobility in Onchan have it all. Daily living aids, wide-fitting shoes, Rise recliners, beds and scooters, including lightweight and airline-approved models. Call in and see how our expert team can make your life easier. Manx Mobility at the top of Summer Hill.
The exclusive Kärcher store is open with thousands of products, accessories and parts in stock. For Kärcher sales and service, Hersham Electrical, Shipyard Industrial Estate, Ramsey.
You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
Now, one of the island's largest veterinary practices has announced it's pulling out of farm work at the end of the month, a move that has caused some concern in the farming community. Well, Lewis has been taking a look at this story and is with me now. Lewis, would you just outline what's happening first of all?
Yeah, faster my Beth. So Milan Vets has confirmed it'll stop all farm veterinary services from the 30th of November. The company says it's simply not sustainable anymore because of a long-term decline in pastoral farming and the number of farm clients on the Isle of Man.
And so what's the sort of reaction been so far to this then?
Well, like you said, we've had reports of significant concern from those in the agricultural sector. Farmer Paul Costain believes Milan looks after around 90% of the island's livestock. He says the decision has dropped farmers in it with just 3 weeks' notice and wants the practice to reconsider.
OK, let's hear from Paul Costain now. Here he is talking to Christian earlier today.
It's such short notice that everything is up in the air. Okay, there may be other practices that could take on the clients, but they tend to be small animal clients with maybe one or two customers. I would say Milan, their farm agricultural veterinary division covers probably at least 90% of the island's equine and farm animals. Christian, it's been a comfort blanket knowing that, all right, things happen with animals that, you know, whether it's a breech or it's a cesarean, you know, we can phone our large animal vet and it's 24/7 cover. If we haven't got that, it's, well, if we can't get the, say it's a cesarean, we can't get the calf out. Farmers aren't by law allowed to carry out that procedure. So it'd have to be euthanized. The animal would, that would it, be out of the herd.
Milan says demand for its farm services has been falling. Do you think that necessarily reflects what you're seeing on the ground?
It reflects that farmers are actually doing a bloody good job of what we've been told to do. And that's look at the herd health, take bloods from the animals, treat things before they actually happen. So we followed all that. And as I said, they're probably looking at the sale of antibiotics and thinking, well, they're falling simply because they're falling because farmers are doing a damn good job.
What would you like to see happen next? Because farmers without vet support will presumably be looking for other practices.
Reverse that decision. If not, these are people maybe who don't understand. Well, I'm sure they must do. They've been in the business for a long time. They must have discussed it and decided to make that decision. But surely to God, give us 6 months to try and work something out, but not just suddenly drop it with 3 weeks. So if the decision hasn't been reversed, then I'm sure individuals will either set up their own practice, which they will get the support from the farmers without any shadow of a doubt. We're very loyal. This is how the loyalty has been repaid.
That was Paul Costain talking to Christian there. Lewis, we have also had a statement from the government as well.
Yeah, so the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture says it's now in talks with other vets and industry representatives to make sure animal welfare isn't affected and that farmers can still access the care they need.
Lewis, thank you very much indeed. That full story is on the Manx Radio website. It's 8 minutes past five. Now, the Infrastructure Minister says specialist lawyers are currently trying to establish how a problem with the new Liverpool ferry terminal was able to happen. So last month, it was revealed the facility at Prince's Half Tide Dock needed to be adjusted because mooring lines for the Manxman and Ben McCree were clashing with a dolphin fender there. Now, the terminal opened its doors in June last year. It's estimated to have cost between 70 and 75 million pounds, and Dr. Michelle Haywood has been explaining more about the issue.
The fender we're talking about is the one that is most upriver, and that fender is actually used by Mananan to manoeuvre away from that berth at certain states of the tide. So the problem was identified last year, and very early on in the design there was a berthing study that was commissioned by a specialist that looked at where the ropes would have to route from the Ben McCree to berth onto that, and then the Manxman was designed so that the ropes would route in a similar way. So the design worked for both. At low water, what happens is the ropes go up and over the fenders, and that puts a bend in those ropes, which is beyond the working tolerance of those ropes and risks causing sudden catastrophic failure. So we knew about this problem last year, but we couldn't do anything about it because of the Mananan needing to use the berth during the summer. and we couldn't take that fender away. I'm still unclear as to where the problem exists, whether it was in the berthing study, whether it was in the design of the fenders, whether it was in the installation of the fenders or what, and that is being worked through. There are a number of companies that were involved right the way through that we have to sit down and work out, and we are already involved in those discussions with them with the aid of specialist lawyers. So I don't know the answer to the question. I want to know as well. Trust me, I want to know the answer to this one too. So all of those factors have contributed to where we are now. The important thing from my perspective is to get that berth working as soon as we can, and that means removing that front fender to allow the Manxman to berth in there across the winter.
Why didn't somebody spot this before?
I don't know that answer either, because I want to know that. Yeah, if you don't know where the fault lies, it's hard to say, well, who signed off on this? And I genuinely don't know if it was originally the berthing study is wrong. You know, all of those things happened sort of well before my time, but they're all complex engineering questions, and at the moment I don't know, but I know work is underway to ascertain that. And the work is underway to ascertain that, and it's really important to do that because there are now costs associated with the fact that the fender doesn't work with the vessels as it should. So there will be some liability for those costs, and so it's important to determine where the process went wrong. But of more importance at the moment is to fix the issue, which is the work that's underway at the moment.
That's the DOI Minister, Dr. Michelle Haywood there. Well, work to improve the mooring is scheduled for this weekend. It has been delayed a number of times because the heavy lifting crane barge that's needed hasn't been able to get in because of the weather. So that means this weekend's sailings, which were originally for Liverpool, are now going to be to and from Heysham instead. You can find out more as ever on the Manx Radio website. 11 minutes past five. So let's just recap this story that we first heard last night concerning that independent report into Manx Care. So it found that the current health and care social model on the Isle of Man is not operating as well as originally intended following the health body's establishment in 2021. So as a result, four strategic options have been produced to try and rectify those issues. So option one is do nothing. Option two, fully implement the Sir Jonathan Michael independent review recommendations. Option three is to strengthen the partnership between Manx Care and DHSC. And option four is to reintegrate Manx Care within the DHSC. Well, the Ramsay MHK Laurie Hooper, who is, as you might remember, a former health minister, told Lewis that the issues identified in this report have been raised before, and it's the funding that he believes is the issue.
This is the drum that I was banging for my entire time in health, is that actually you need a long-term funding plan for the health department. Seeing this report, it is embarrassing to see the government have to go out to external consultants to tell them something that anyone working in the system could already tell you, and in fact have been telling you for years. So I suppose the question I've got for the government is, why didn't they just listen to me, to Manx Care, to staff at the time and do some of these things? And actually, why didn't we just implement these parts of the Sir Jonathan report in the first instance? It all comes down to that budgetary question. That's the bit that we never did. We never implemented it. It's too difficult. Not going to happen. But actually, time and time again, that's the core problem that needs addressing.
So your option that you would take up would be option two, fully implement the Sir Jonathan Michael independent review recommendations. You just need the budget for it.
Possibly. I mean, option two or three both seem quite reasonable. Closer working between the two parties makes a lot of sense, but in order to do that, you will need to have a proper strategic commissioning approach with service specifications. Again, something that Sir Jonathan very clearly said, and something the department has never been resourced to deliver. I think this is the problem. It seems to be the perennial issue with the Isle of Man government, is we get a report that tells us to do things. We do some bits of it, the easy bits. We don't do the hard bits, and then it doesn't really work. So we do another report a few years later, which says, you know those things you should have done, go and do them. I know they're hard, but do them. And then we'll accept this report, and no doubt Tim Wald will vote in favour of receiving this and saying, yes, we should go and do these things. And in 3 years' time, I guarantee you we'll be in the same boat coming back again saying, sorry, Tim Wald, but it isn't really working because we haven't done the hard bits, notably the finances. We haven't done that, so we can do another report and find out again what's going wrong. We're on a merry-go-round here and I don't understand it.
That's the Ramsay MHK former Health Minister Laurie Hooper talking to Lewis. Well, we did invite the Health Minister Claire Christian to respond to Mr Hooper's comments. Regarding the report, she said it provides an important opportunity to reflect on the current model, address particular issues and adapt appropriately. The findings will be debated, she says, in the December sitting of Tim Wald, where members will have the opportunity to shape the next steps of our health and social care system. Our focus, says Claire Christian, must remain on delivering sustainable, high quality services for the people of the Isle of Man. 14 minutes past five, and Port Erin commissioners are urging people to respond to the Department of Infrastructure's 20-mile-an-hour consultation. The local authority says it'll be lodging its own response, but it would like to hear from residents about whether they are for or against, as well as any unique situations which might affect them. The chair of the commissioners, Hannah McKenzie, believes it's really important for people to have their say, and now is the time, she says, for people to speak up and hopefully make a difference to their area.
So it's a really important part of the village, the speed limit. So we're looking for everybody that has an opinion, whether it be for, against, or, you know, something unique to where they live. They really should take the time to either fill out the online consultation. And if they're struggling to use that, then we have forms available in the George Herdman Library and in the office. And actually come back to the board, because as a board, we represent people, and we're more than happy to collate the responses and make a decision based on what we receive back into the office.
How important is it for people to get in touch with you guys about this?
Well, I think it's really important because the minister has stated that it's still in the consultation stages. It's still not in black and white. And therefore, you know, if the public have very strong opinions, then now is the time when they really can speak up and hopefully make a difference to the area if they want to see a difference.
Will the board be submitting something itself to the consultation, or will you be doing a slightly different route?
We will definitely be doing a general board response. Tonight we met with Minister Hayward and her officer, and we had many points that we raised as a board, which will then go together and be submitted as a board. I think a lot of us will also, being residents, will submit our own individual consultation things too.
That's the chair of Port Erin Commissioners, Hannah McKenzie, talking to local democracy reporter Emma Draper.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside Tyres and Service Centre.
All okay on the police pages, so that's good news as you're travelling home this evening, and it's the usual roadworks that are out and about all over the island at the moment. All okay down at the airport though, and with the steam packet, the Manxman is due into Douglas at around about 5:45 and heading out again for Heysham at 7:15.
Quayside Tyres and Service Centre, with 1 year's free engine warranty from Castrol. Get more with Quayside.
It's coming up to 16 and a half minutes past five. So there's a school in Douglas that's been chosen for a new pilot project, which will create a so-called adaptive classroom. And the aim is to make every child feel safe, supported and able to thrive. Now, it says it moves away from the traditional school concept, which tends to focus on behaviour, management and moves towards an environment that encourages connection, compassion and belonging. Schoolie Jubilee in Douglas has been chosen for the pilot scheme, and it's all pioneered by Ellenstone LTD and Work Solutions. Christian Jones has been talking to the directors, Brendan Kenny and Paul Murphy.
For the students, ideally they work on a classroom table, but some students feel more comfortable to sit on a sofa with a laptop table. If that works for them, they still do their work. We should encourage that. They shouldn't be forced to sit on a plastic chair on a table. If the work still gets done and they're comfortable, it's empowering the children to make their choice as well. That's a big part of the adaptive classroom. We're trying to make sure that all the students are treated equally within the classroom. Also with a height-adjustable footrest on the chair, which helps with the proprioception of the children. For the ones that who need that, it works for them. I think a lot of schools aren't aware what is available from the education sector. A lot of them order the same things time and time again. The adaptive classroom is a unique approach to show schools that things are different. There's lots of choice out there now. Design of a classroom hasn't changed since Victorian times. That doesn't work. And we all know that doesn't work. It doesn't work within the commercial setting. And it definitely doesn't work within education. By working with the Isle of Man and Jubilee School, we are really transforming that classroom. Lots of schools will see this classroom and be very interested to see how this pilot scheme runs. It's not just the environment, it's also with the restorative training that comes along with that. A lot of design is also trauma-informed design, but it's things as the flooring colour, the wall colours, the lighting, all these things come together, combine to create the adaptive classroom.
I hope there's a strategic plan to roll this out across all the schools on the island. Education is the bedrock of how we get our economic development through. We've got to bring the best people through on the island and give them the best opportunities. And there's a lot of neurodiverse people within classrooms. Like myself, I'm dyslexic. I left school at 16, I was excluded, and I had to get out on my own and make my own way. What we want to do is help everyone have the same chance of success and help them to grow and thrive.
That sounds like such a great project. And that was Brendan Kenny and Paul Murphy talking about the adaptive classrooms there. 19 minutes past five. Well, if you're upset that you missed the spectacular aurora last night, don't worry. It could be out again tonight if the weather's all right. And apparently it could be equally as good. Sir Howard Parkin, he's from Astromanx, says despite that yellow weather warning for heavy rain, as long as the skies are pretty clear, we will be able to watch the light show. And he says last night the aurora forecast was at 8 and it could possibly be the same level tonight.
We've been anticipating a decent auroral display for a few months now, and it looks like this last night, tonight, hopefully are going to be it.
I woke up at about quarter to five this morning. When I took a photo, there was still some shades, some colour that I could see in the yeah. photo that I captured. So it was still out there for a few hours.
Oh, yeah, and it'll still be there now, ironically, but it's daylight, of course, so we won't see it. But what's happened, the technical reason for it, is that the sun has emitted two massive flares, two what we call coronal mass ejection, or CMEs. And these two flares, one of which at least is what we call an X5 flare, which is as big as it gets, impacted us yesterday. So that's had the effect of putting an aurora in the atmosphere, north and south hemisphere, of course, which will hopefully be still there tonight. And there are all sorts of predictions that it could be as good as it was last year.
Right. Now, tell us about tonight's one. What can we expect? I know we've got a yellow weather warning for heavy rain, so that already puts a dampen on it.
Just to add to it, if it does clear, we've also got a bright moon as well, but never mind that. What you need to do is go outside repeatedly throughout the evening and see if the sky is clearing to the north. If the sky is clearing to the north, then keep looking or go back out again an hour or so later. Statistically, aurora always seems to be the best after midnight. That said, last year it was before midnight. But this particular display, from what evidence we've got from last night, is that it went on as soon as the sky cleared, the aurora was there. So we're hoping the same will happen tonight. So my advice to anyone who's listening is to go outside. If it is clear, then wrap up warm and go somewhere where you've got an uninterrupted northern horizon view.
It's normally between like your August and your October that you have these aurora spottings. Is it quite late in the year, or do we just always have
them? It is a little. And the two peaks of auroral displays tend to be centred on the two equinoxes. The two equinoxes, that's the 21st of March and the 21st of September. So this is a late equinoctial auroral display, if you like, from November. But because it's the peak period of aurora every 11 years, you're getting the aurora right through in the hours of darkness, right through the winter as well. Last year, as I say, was spectacular. And the forecast is at the moment, never mind the weather, that it could be equally good tonight.
And hopefully there will be some amazing photographs. We shared some of them on the Manx Radio Facebook page from last night earlier today. So do go and take a look at them. It's like one of those things, isn't it? I always hear and see these photographs, but whenever I actually go out and see it myself, it's not there. It's like that Kit Kat advert with the pandas. At 22 minutes past five, the Isle of Man is hosting the 2025 International Pool Association Tour Grand Finals this week. It began with a fly around today before the finals from Friday to Sunday and features the island's only professional pool player, David Adanal, among those involved. David and IPA Secretary Bronan Ward speaking to Darren Timpson here.
I made a final of one of these events 18 months ago and not been to the last eight since, so that's certainly something I'd like to achieve at some point. I think doing it in the Isle of Man would be the best location for me to do it on home soil. We've had this event now probably about 5-6 years now. It's always been a great event. They're very, very popular with the locals as well. Great for the locals to have a taste of an event like this, you know, because I do it, you know, 5, 6, 7 times a year. And it's great for them to have a go at it as well.
And do you think this will be able to maybe put a few local players as well onto the pool map, I suppose, a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we have quite a few good players over in the Isle of Man. So, you know, that's exactly always been my goal, to try and get other players on the IPA as well. And, you know, I've been doing it to try and put the Isle of Man on the pool map, so to speak. And as you say, so something I'd like to see other players do, because we certainly do have other quality players that can certainly do that.
We do get lots of local entries into the event. So in that respect, it does give more amateur to players from the island a taste of how events are run, and they get an opportunity to sort of watch out professional players.
Yeah, I spoke to David yesterday. How good is it to see that there's also a professional Isle of Man pool player as well involved in this competition?
Well, I think it kind of rewards Dave for he has been a professional pool player for a long time, and he has travelled the length and breadth of the UK, always travelling himself on his own from the island, and we all know that sometimes can be a bit difficult. And I think he's very proud that the IPA can come to the island, and so that he can show his compatriots then exactly how he progressed to become a professional player.
Oh, that's lovely. Bronwyn Ward there and David Adnalls talking to Darren Timpson a little bit earlier today. 24 minutes past five. Rob is here now with the sports news. Faster Mai, good evening.
Faster Mai. Well, starting off with motorsport, because Honda Racing has confirmed Dean Harrison and John McGuinness will remain with the team for next year's Isle of Man TT. Harrison returns following a season that saw him secure two TT wins in the Superstock class, as well as podiums at the Northwest 200. For McGuinness, 2026 will be his 30th year of competition at the Isle of Man TT. Both will also form Honda Racing UK's road squad for next year's Northwest 200, in which McGuinness will be aiming to make his 100th race start at the Northern Ireland meeting. Well, in the announcement, Harrison says he's excited to be staying with Honda for another year and build on the hard work they've already done. Meanwhile, McGuinness adds, "I've been on a journey that has not stopped giving. It's been like Christmas Day over and over again," and that he couldn't be prouder to keep on going and be part of this team. Well, away from road racing in 2026, Harrison is also expected to contest the Pirelli National Superstock Series, making the switch from British Supersport Championship, which he was part of this season. Also in motorsport, a host of stars of the Isle of Man TT races will get their campaigns at the 2025 Macau Grand Prix underway tonight. The 57th edition of the Macau Motorcycle Grand Prix is scheduled to begin with free practice from around 11:45pm UK time this evening, or 7:45am on Thursday the 13th of November local time. Two Manx riders will be among the 20 strong field of competitors this year, with Marcus Simpson and Michael Evans taking part in their second and third appearances at the meeting respectively. Also among the entries are 2024 senior TT champion Davey Todd, 13-time TT winner and TT outright lap record holder Peter Hickman, as well as the likes of Michael Sweeney, Rob Hodgson and David Johnson, to name just a few. The schedule does remain subject to change depending on prevailing conditions and circumstances. And finally, the Manx Rally has been crowned the Pro Tyre Asphalt Rally Championship Rally of the Year for the third year in a row. The 2025 Ireland meeting claimed the prize during the Pro Tyre Motorsport UK Asphalt Rally Championship Gala prize-giving ceremony held at Drayton Manor Hotel in Stafford last Saturday. It's after the event claimed the same prize in both 2023 and 2024.
Thank you very much indeed, Rob. Have I asked you before if you've been in a rally car? You look like the sort of person who would have been.
No, but it's something I've been keen to do.
Really?
I have been chatting with the guys over at Manx Autosport. Maybe later in the year there might be a chance just to give it a go. That's all I know, though. You know, it's something we might... We might try and see if we can make it happen. I'd love to do it.
Oh, yeah, and we could strap a camera to you, yeah?
Possibly. I don't know, though, if I'd be given the responsibility of pace notes, because that is a real art and it's a very important job in there. So I don't know if I'd have to brush up on the skills. Well, no experience beforehand, so yeah.
Maybe just chuck you in the boot, yeah? You'll enjoy that. I'll be fine. Rob, thank you very much indeed. That is all from Update this evening. Coming up next on Manx Radio, it is Spotlight. And tonight, H catches up with two of the actors involved in a forthcoming performance of Ibsen, The Doll's House, which is taking place at the Ballacameen Studio Theatre. He also takes a last look at the wonderful Perspectives exhibition at the Loom Gallery and speaks to conductor Graham Kirkland ahead of the Symphony Orchestra's gala performance at the Villa Marina, which is on the 23rd of November. So that's Spotlight coming up next, available straight after broadcast as a podcast in all the usual places. Then at 6pm, it's Greatest Hits with Chris Kinley. At 9, it's the Opera Hour with Ernie Thorne, and tonight he tells the story of an opera written to commemorate Armistice Day and other operas connected with war. So that will also be available as a podcast shortly after broadcast as well. And then Rhiann will be with you from 10 with After Hours. Update will be back at 5 tomorrow. Whatever you're doing this evening, get some photos of that aurora if you can, and we'll talk to you then.